Well, we've reached a bit of a milestone here in 5 Minutes in Church History. This week marks our 1 year anniversary. And church historians, they like to celebrate dates, they like to celebrate birth dates, they like to celebrate anniversaries. So maybe we should celebrate our own anniversary here with our first year of 5 Minutes in Church History. And to do that, we're going to do something a little special. Instead of being a weekly podcast this week, we're going to have a daily podcast. So every day this week, Monday through Friday, you can come back to us and there'll be a new episode. The other thing we're going to do to celebrate this anniversary is to look at what I'm affectionately calling my top five favorite moments in church history. So without further ado, let's celebrate our first year and let's take a look at these top five favorite moments. Well, the first date I landed on is the date 325. I picked this date for several reasons. One, this is the date of the Nicene Council. And out of the Nicene Council came that wonderful statement of Christian orthodoxy, the Nicene Creed. This date also represents for us a crucial moment in the life of the church. You see, it was just a few decades prior that Christianity was illegal in the Roman Empire. In fact, in the 290s and in the 30s, that first decade of the 300s, was an intense time of persecution, almost an unprecedented time of persecution of Christians. And then along comes Constantine and his so-called conversion. There's the jury still out on that one in terms of Constantine's conversion, but historians will speak of it. And in the wake of that, we have the Edict of Milan in 313 and the legalization of Christianity. A few more edicts followed that not only contributed to the legalization of Christianity, it's no longer an illegal religion, or as the Romans called it, an illegal superstition, but also legislation that almost sort of favored churches and favored Christians. And what we see within a generation is a massive spread of Christianity within the Roman Empire. So here we are in 313, and then a dozen years later, we have this first great ecumenical council, the Council of Nicaea. It was also in the 300s that we have one of these great figures. We talked about him just a couple weeks ago, Athanasius. And in fact, Athanasius factors very significantly into the Nicene Creed and into this date, 325. So why do we have this council? What is the reason that we have the Nicene Council? It has to do with a presbyter, an elder in one of the churches. His name was Arius. Arius had promoted the idea that Jesus is unique, that Jesus is beyond us human beings, but that he's not God. And of course, this gets right at the heart of orthodoxy, the statement that Jesus is the God-man. And so Arius's teachings were very disruptive within the early church. And so a council was called, a bringing together of the bishops to settle this matter and to lay down the law, as it were, for the church. And there at Nicaea, which is this wonderful city, it's modern day Iznik, which is just off of Lake Iznik in Turkey. And it was one of the summer palaces of Constantine, and he invited all of these theologians to gather there and spend this time hashing through these theological disputes. And the result of that is the Nicene Creed. I also picked this date because the Nicene Creed has, to me, what is one of my favorite lines in theological literature. It is the line simply this: for us and for our salvation. Jesus is the God-man. His equality with God, as Paul tells us, is something that he did not have to grasp. He had it. And yet he took on flesh. He was made human. He became one of us. He didn't simply appear to be human. He was human. And he was God. He is the God-man. And he is the God-man for us and for our salvation. So there's our first favorite moment in church history, 325 and the Nicene Creed. I'm Steve Nichols. Thanks for joining us for 5 Minutes in Church History. As we finish up this week's episode, here's a quote from one of our favorite medieval theologians, Anselm of Canterbury. "For in whose power is hell or the devil? Or whose is the kingdom of heaven, if it be not his who created all things? Whatever things, therefore, you dread or hope for, all lie subject to his will, whom nothing can oppose."